you've tapped or clicked in to College Volleyball Weekly on Viral Volley Media. Now here's your host, Rob on mic.
Yep, we are here in episode 10 of the season, and arguing has started already. The salty guys have made their way in week 10, and it's happening. I wish I would have turned on the record during our pre-discussions because it's getting hot in here already. But you're listening to College Volleyball Weekly, men's Division 1-2 top 20. We've got Theo Edwards of San Fernando State University, Nordoff State, whatever we're calling the Theo Whites, but that's CSUN. Jay Hossick of the Fighting Jay Hossicks, George Mason, Brad Rothschatter of the Big Bad Brads of UC San Diego, otherwise known as the Tritons. And we got the friendlies of Lewis University, or Cool Pilot Guy, which is what's been coming up for Dan Friend of Lewis. So, guys, let's talk results, and then we can have our little, you know, verbal brawls, and it will be, you know, fun as always. So let's look at week 9, what we saw, but let's always do the elephant in the room segment. One most recent memory is me seeing Brad Rothschatter yesterday. I'll let him talk about that series.
No, Rob, sounds like you want to talk about it.
On Friday we hosted UC Irvine, and then Sunday we went up to Irvine and played in Crawford Hall, and I think we sold it out in 650 seats. All of them were taken up, and then some standing room only. So it was definitely fun kind of playing in a totally different gym and environment there. We got swept both nights, and it was a kind of a case of, you know, night one, offensively, we just couldn't slow them down. We couldn't stop them. We were doing some good things from the end line. We were doing some good things as a team where we're touching a lot of balls, but just not quite able to execute on some of the small little plays. And then night two, we made a few little adjustments, slowed them down offensively. But then they also slowed us down offensively, to where it ended up being, you know, pretty similar matches, pretty similar scores. We had some opportunities in second set to take control of the match, had some swings for the set, and we just couldn't quite put it away. They played really good defense throughout both nights. And this guy Heno is pretty good. I think you guys might have talked about him once or twice.
Who?
Heno. He just got here from France. But then Darcy Tague really woke up night two. He played really, really well on the right for them. And Cole Power was just really good defensively throughout the time. And I think that's something we've talked about briefly, but yeah, he was really impressive defensively and in serve receive in the few opportunities he got. We didn't try to serve him too much. Irvine played really well. And it was one of those nights where I was like, all right, we played good, but they were just a little bit better.
Yeah. Well, I'll only add that yesterday's match, the Sunday matchup, was such an entertaining match. I mean, it almost went 2 hours. It's only a 3-set match, but a couple deuce sets, and then I think a 25-20. But I mean, it was so entertaining. Fast paced, long rallies, big hit balls. Sebastian Lara, real dealing, playing some good ball for you. Your Selcho and Garrison were playing really well, also. So good to see Dyer back in the lineup playing some ball as well. But overall, such a fun match to watch. And I know you had another match during the week, and I think I'll have you mention your matchup against Charleston and have Theo go and talk about his elephant in the room week.
Yeah, we had University of Charleston came out. They came out. They had the West Coast trip. They had Concordia on Tuesday, us on Wednesday, and then Theo and Northridge on Friday and Santa Barbara on Saturday. And when we got them, on the back half of the doubleheader after the Concordia match. So they rested a few guys and were kind of doing some load management. Obviously, four matches in a week is a hefty load. And they had this Friday, Saturday with Jay at home. So six matches over the course of really 7 days is pretty gnarly stretch. So they were doing some load management, but they had a right side, Evans Edward from Dominican Republic, who just had a nasty, nasty arm and played really well, had 20 plus kills against us. I forget exactly. But he played really, really well. And they just were very, very scrappy. And that was similar to what you were talking about, Rob, last night, to where we beat them in four But every set was really close, if not extended. And we walked out of it afterwards, and I think both teams felt like it was a 5-set match, just with like how you feel and your mentality afterwards, and just being so drained from being dialed in for so long, that it was just really fun. And they have a lot of internationals and a lot of guys who aren't from the U.S. and didn't play club volleyball, so it was really, really fun just getting to play a different style of game, and a different level of fire that they brought, and kind of some different mannerisms that we don't see all too often on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a grind, and that team was tough and scrappy, and you know, it ended up, I think they kind of ran out of gas as the trip and as so much volleyball came their way. I know Luke Reynolds, their coach, was really excited about the trip, and then by the end of it, he was like, oh, this is a really tough stretch. And obviously, you know, as the coach, you like to like play tough teams to set yourself up for conference play in the conference tournament. And I think most of the time that ends up working out really well, but there are some times where the trip can end up hurting you, like it might have for Charleston.
Yeah. Let's go over to Theo, then we'll let the other coaches comment on both your team's weeks. Theo, you had Pepperdine and Charleston.
Yeah, sure. I'll start. Even though we played Pepperdine early in the week, I'll start with Charleston just because we're kind of on that train. I think Brad kind of hit it on the head. If you guys, you know, by the time you hit record, Rob, I had already Venmo'd Brad for the war that he had thrown at Charleston, because the number of injuries that Charleston has had, and you know, talking to Luke and you know, as coaches, even on our side of the net, we don't want to see that, right? We don't want to see teams go down, and you want to play the best version of what that team has to offer. And that team is incredibly talented, a lot of international players, and just, they do have some depth, but they have a couple of players that are pretty special and really unique. And Delancey is one of them, who Brad got to see for stretches. And he ended up breaking his finger or having a hand injury in that match. And so by the time they got to Northridge, we didn't have an opportunity to see him. And I know Jay had put a big hype on it last week in the podcast, just talking about having the tale of two really high jumpers, and to see Jalen and Delancey go against each other would have been a really, really a lot of fun. So by the time they got to us, it was a little bit of a different story, and, you know, they had a lot of guys come in and try and assist them. But at the end of the day, we ended up beating them in three. And I got to give a shout out. We don't talk about this very much because I think in general, volleyball is not a high injury risk sport. I think, you know, you get some ankles here and there, you get some shoulders that are a little sore and maybe a labrum or something like that every once in a while. But I saw a really, really severe injury that took place in our gym with Charleston and one of their outside hitters, and just kind of to protect just a little bit of that medical privacy. I don't know that I want to necessarily talk too much about the situation, but it was a lower leg injury, and the athletic trainers on site, both Charleston's athletic trainer and our athletic trainer, jumped into action, and it was fantastic the way that they addressed and took care of this athlete. And yeah, you hate to see those situations take place. But when you do, to have the medical professionals, and I think the conversation that I want to at least have heard on our podcast is there are a lot of teams that are underfunded. And when these injuries, like the really serious injuries, take place, like the one that happened in our gym, and obviously we've talked about Camden Gianni and these other various situations, these teams have to have certified athletic trainers. And what that means for the department and how athletic departments make sure that that is the case. You hate to see these injuries take place, but if there is a professional on hand who knows how to address the situation, you can prevent some really serious long-term things from taking place. And so I hope that that is the case across the country, that we see more and more teams traveling with athletic trainers and have an athletic trainer on hand at all times, just because of the severity of it. But anyways, really, really great match. And I tip my hat to Luke and to his group, and, you know, them bringing the team out and having this West Coast swing, even though it was a challenge and all of the injuries that they faced. early in the week, we played Pepperdine, which was an absolute doozy. I actually think that both our five setter with Lewis, with Dan's group, and the five setter with Pepperdine, although we didn't come out on top, it really helped us get better in a lot of ways. It helped us learn a lot about ourselves, some things that we hadn't seen. And, by the end of the week, we finally had some hitters, some middle blockers being productive, and some adjustments that we made on our end that really helped our team. And the matchup with Pep was awesome. It was back and forth. I think we had a 10-8 lead in the fifth, and ended up losing, but it was a really fun match, and we ended up losing in five.
Yeah, those post-match interviews, Theo, after you lose in five, you definitely have a downtrodden look.
It is a real struggle to find the positives, but these coaches know, when you get to the fifth set and you lose by 2 points, it's amazing how different the swing can be, right? If you win 15-13, how you feel, what it does, the energy it brings. And obviously Dan was just in that spot. But then you lose 15-13, right? And it could go either way. Your team played very similarly aside from those 2 points that were the deciding factor in the match. So trying to find the positive in it, Rob, but it's a real challenge. I'll tell you what.
I have to give you credit, though. I love the fact you got the social going, just like Dan does with his few minutes with coach segment. Well, let's let the other two coaches, Jay and Dan, jump in on any of the matches or matchups that you two have spoken about. Who wants to go in? Jay?
Yeah. I'll be brief here. It's an unfortunate situation. I think there's a lot of teams right now that are facing the injury bug. Charleston is a pretty darn good team. And when we faced them, they were at full strength and were an absolute handful. Obviously, they beat us the night before, and then we beat them. But I was really excited to see them go out to California, play some high-quality teams that are not normally used to seeing them, and see that what they could do. And I think even not at full strength, they were missing their starting setter, they were missing an outside hitter, they're missing another kid, and all of a sudden, they got two or three guys on the court that maybe are not that experienced, and for them to play as well as they did and with as much heart as they did and as many matches as they played in 1 week span time, I mean, that's Niffen-esque in terms of scheduling, right? And kudos to Luke and his guys. They went out there and I know they didn't get the results they wanted, but they showed that even not at full strength, they're a team to be reckoned with. So, I'm sure Luke will go home and lick his wounds and kind of say, hey, let's regroup and refocus and get healthy again. And when they are, they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah. Dan, anything to add on there?
Yeah, I think as a coach, it's always a challenging piece. I remember back in the day, like on our spring breaks, we'd always go out for a week and play three or four matches. And is it good or is it bad? Do you play two? Do you play four? You try to maximize the opportunity for the kids in different jibs. And that's always a balancing act. And which year do you have a strong enough team that's like, hey, we can play three or four, or hey, no, we should just play two. And, so I think in the end, I think his group will be better because of the competition. Even if they have some injuries and things like that, I think in the end, it'll make them better as they roll into the second half of conference. Hopefully you can get a couple guys healthy as they move forward and the pieces that he kind of needs. But we all know that he's got a talented group of guys, but at the same time, it was a good test for his group. And that's important for program growth. Maybe you don't see it immediately right away, but I think it's important as you're moving your program forward. And him going into his I think third year, right, guys? So for Luke, yeah. Going into his third year, I think it's good for the program from that stand. So from that standpoint. So I echo Theo's things about the I'm a former certified athletic trainer, so I echo the sentiments about, I think we were unfortunate, didn't have a trainer with us at Theo's place, and his staff was fantastic when we had our knee injury with our guy. We've been fortunate a couple of times when we don't have a trainer that other places have really stepped up and if something happens or helped us in terms of that. But they are an undervalued profession and an underpaid profession in the college realms. And that really needs to be fixed by administrations. And we could go into a whole podcast on that, but that's all I'll say.
And that's a great segue because it's National Athletic Trainer Appreciation Month. So
it's
fun, Theo Dan.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Let's go over
Rob,
to Jay.
I wanted to comment on the Irvine San Diego match real quick, just because I happened to tune in Brad, I think there was a moment you guys were up in set two of that last one. And I think Akil Tangatar hit like a off speeder down the line. And Anthony Sherfan gave the old pump fake, went to dig it, but decided not to. I thought you guys were going to win that set. That's why I'm bringing it up. I felt like this was it. This was the moment. You're taking.
Hey, here's the salt, Brad. We're going to throw it at you and make you relive that. We're going to. It's like when people talk about the national championship and point out plays they remember because we didn't win. It's like, oh, hey, yeah. That was great.
Yeah, really, Irvine came back on a three-point run. And
I thought Theo was going to have something really insightful or like some analytics or some little trick he made. No, like
you guys were playing such great ball at that moment. And
come on, Theo, you know better than that. It just takes one bonehead point, and then all of a sudden the crap hits.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, my bad, fellas. Hey, it's been great. Have a good day.
Let's see, I think
like
we need
24
to
hours ago.
Let's go with Dan's elf in the room. How's your week, Dan?
Let's talk about the MEVA in general. I think ultimately we went to Ohio State and I think they served us off the court. Kudos to them. So we needed to be better. And Jacob Pasture again was pretty darn good. But I think you saw Loyola go in there into a 5-game battle. But then Ohio State ends up having 30 some unforced errors or 40, give or take, late upper 30s between serving and hitting. And again, it's kind of their Ohio State's Achilles heel a little bit. It's like, can they sustain that level of play without the unforced errors? And I've even talked to Birch about it, but Loyola took advantage of it. You know, it's interesting in the league. You've seen Ball State beat Loyola twice. You've seen Loyola beat Ohio State twice. So I do think those three have kind of separated themselves just a hair, but that doesn't mean any team in the league can't beat them. We had Purdue Fort Wayne on Saturday and it was a good battle. We had our Pens kind of step up and do some nice things and they certainly got a good group as well. So we were fortunate to get that win in four. You saw McKendree beat Lindenwood in three at home. And that was where Lindenwood beat Loyola last week. And then McKendree beat Quincy as well. So McKendree got a couple wins in terms of that. But I think in Ball State, I think beat Quincy. But I think there's going to be a 3 or 4-way tie again for first and a 3 or 4-way tie for whatever it was, fourth or whatever it was last year again, probably. So,
well, I'm surprised you didn't mention the return of Dan Mangan.
Well, we did. Like we talked about it last week, it was key in their second night victory versus Lindenwood. He's going to stay in the lineup. The kid's good. He's a senior, All American. So I think they're humming with him, I think. And then the freshman from Czech, Daniel, kid's pretty darn good. Yeah.
Yep. All right, other coaches, time to sit the piranha feeding nest now. Go for it.
who do you want us to talk about? The MIB matches, the MIBA matches?
Anything that Dan has mentioned, because that was his moment there.
Covered a lot. I'll be brief. I agree that the sentiment, there's a few teams that seem to be kind of hit or miss, whether it's set by set or match by match, in terms of their service errors and unforced errors attacking. Our team is one of those teams. When we're not making that many mistakes, we're pretty good. But all of a sudden, the next set, you look at it and you go, wow, we can't find the court. And it's unfortunate. But that's the nature of sports, is when can you execute when it matters most? And I think Ohio State is probably going to go watch some video and see if there's some adjustments they can make with their hitters or their servers that can help, minimize that damage, so to speak, moving forward.
Yeah. Brad or Theo, anything else to add there?
One of the pieces there that gets really interesting is, you look at that match and how it unfolded with Ohio State and Loyola. Going into the fifth set, Ohio State just won like 25-15, 25-16, something along those lines, and that's where you see the good of all that aggressiveness from the service line. But then in the fifth set, it becomes a lot shorter. And if two or three side outs on Pastore serve, Wetzel serve, and then it's like, all right, now this match is a lot tighter and it's a lot closer. And now it's what team's going to be the cleanest down the stretch, to where it's how can you have that urgency to side out when those elite top-notch servers are back at the end line. But then also when you have a server who's not as great, how do you maintain that level to site out and that level of attention to detail and focus throughout it?
All right, Theo?
Yeah, I've been saying this for years, but I think the MIVA might be one of the most exciting conferences. You talk about the growth of some of these Division II teams and where McKendree is at today, where Lindenwood is at today, and obviously, you know, PFW always doing its thing. But I feel like every single time those teams play, there is a shot that the favorite doesn't win. And as far as conference parity, that's about as great as it gets. And to see kind of the way things have gone, and then to have Lindenwood, who I think the last couple of weeks has really been playing great, walk into McKendree, and McKendree goes, we're shutting that down. was just pretty cool, man. I love the parody, and I wish that this was on TV, because I think it would be really great for a television deal for the MIVA. Be a lot of fun.
Well, you mentioned Lindenwood, and they actually knocked out the number 19th ranked Lincoln Memorial as well. So, you know, Lincoln Memorial and Damon of the NEC now in the top 20, which is great. And then Lindenwood says, no. We got something to say about that. And they take him down in four. So, you know, Lindenwood was led by Ian Schuler that night and Clay Weeder. But great match for that. You know, caught a little bit of it online. And I'm telling you, MIVA is not a fun place to be right now. Hey, Dan?
Great. One match. I got to go to Hawaii this week, guys. So I can take a break from it. So I'm going to go ahead and play number three and number four. I'm not sure that gets any better. You know what I mean? So but I'm in Hawaii, so.
Well, that's our elephant in the room segment. So let's go into some of the matches that caught our eye this week. But I'm going to interject here because, you know, there's some matches, and it's going to be a cross-topic, cross-match review. But I'm going to talk about chippiness because CSUN Pepperdine and Stanford Grand Canyon, there were some chirping, is that weird? But I'd almost call it beyond chirping. But, I mean, for me, it was entertaining to watch, you know, because of high energy in the game. But curious on your guys' thoughts on those matchups and the, I don't want to say antics, but the extracurricular activity on the court. So
our guy's got a yellow card. Go get it, guys. Here we go.
Listen, if you know men's volleyball, they are some of the best hecklers in the world. You know, there is a gentleman that I think all of us on this podcast know named Matt Boyce. And if you ever listen to Matt Boyce, it is absolutely comedy hour. You have to have a 2-drink minimum whenever he speaks. He is absolutely fantastic. But that's the pinnacle. There's a lot of guys underneath him that are also just as good. And if you listen to the cleverness of some of these guys, you know, you could understand why heckling the guys across the net can be entertaining. Now, that being said, we compartmentalize it. We're in a battle. It's a heated moment. It's a, you know, where our energy's up, our adrenaline's flowing. You know, a guy might look at you a little funky across the net. A guy might give you a little word here and there, might let you have it a little bit. And you maybe react to it, maybe not as much as you should or more than you should. But there's nothing wrong with a little moxie. There's nothing wrong with a little. Listen, one of my favorite stories, I played against Loyola when I was at Santa Cruz. And they had a setter on the team at the time. I can't remember who it was, but Shane Davis was on that team. And I went up for a swing on the outside. Their setter yelled, "Gotcha," before I even contacted the ball, roofed me. I looked at my setter and I go, "Give me the next ball." Same exact thing happened. I went up before I even contacted the ball. He yelled, "Gotcha," and he got me again. And then I gave a third one because I told my setter, "Just keep beating me, keep beating me." And he yelled, "Gotcha," and I tipped it over his head. And I looked at him, I go, "No, he didn't." But that's the whole fun of the thing is, like, there's this little dialogue going back and forth. If you have a little bit of engagement, all of a sudden the match takes on a little bit more importance to you. So I'm okay with it as long as it doesn't get to fisticuffs, as long as there's not the FU through the net. That stuff just kind of gets a little bit annoying after a while. But if there's a little comment here and there, who cares? It's part of the game.
Yep. All right, everyone else.
Yeah, I'll chime in on the you know, when we played Lewis, there were a couple yellows I think that went, and it was great. Like, it was all in good fun.
Between you and Dan?
It wasn't me and Dan, but it was a couple of our players were definitely getting chippy. So in the Pepperdine match, I still to this, I don't know what was said exactly, but the refs overheard it. Jay kind of alluded to the fact that there's maybe some chipping that happens with a block, a kill here. There's that moment of you know, a second or two where both players are still at the net, where maybe some action gets passed, right? Well, sometimes they end up saying it a little too loud, right? And the ref ends up catching it. A red card flew in the Pepperdine match, and it was the first time I've seen a red, and I can't even remember. But there were multiple yellows and multiple warnings that had gone out. The red card came, and it was really funny because both Winder and I looked across, and we were like, what happens? Like, it's been so long since we've seen a red card that we weren't even sure at what point was the red card, what was it about? Was it about the play? Was it about after? Does the point still get awarded to the team that scored? And then there's an additional point after. So is it a 2-point play? Like, we were both laughing because we were like, we're not even sure. And then obviously the kid who got the red was kicked out of the game. It was, but like you said, it was a very charged match.
They kicked him out of the game for a red card?
They kicked him out of the game.
That's not a red card. That's a red and a yellow together. Yeah. Is how they should have done it.
Yeah.
Is that what it was supposed to be?
If they just kicked him out for just a red card, that's actually wrong.
You know what, then, Dan? I might have had it wrong. It might have been that Winder pulled him.
Oh, okay.
It might have been that Winder pulled him out. Now that I think about it, I don't know that the ref signaled that he had to leave. I think Winder might have made the sub.
Yeah, that's it. When they put the two cards together and hold them up,
that's when you're dismissed. Okay.
And I've only seen that one time, and that wasn't in college match. It was at adult nationals.
Well, you've been doing this longer than me, Dan. That was the first red I think I've seen in college. Only I've ever seen a red card.
I got my own red. Jay's probably pocketing a handful of reds himself, just so you know. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you mentioned you have never seen the yellow and red together. In my first year of coaching, I actually did get a yellow and a red together. So
you, Jay?
And it was at a women's match when I was coaching the women's team. It wasn't very glamorous, so I'm just going to leave it at that. It had nothing to do with me yelling at a player. It was the referees were awful. This is a long, long time ago. So.
Yeah, you and me both. First year I got ejected from a match, my very first year. So I'm with you. It's okay, buddy. So rookie mistakes sometimes.
Brad's the only angel in the group here, apparently.
Yeah. Hey, my opinion on the chippiness is, who cares? Go after it. Like, you know what I mean? I think we have too many soft things in this world right now. So I'm okay if our guys are a little edgy and getting after it and can be competitive. Jay mentioned there's a line. You shouldn't use profanity. And I like when our guys are more clever versus like just, you know, F you or something like that. That's pretty bad. You know what I mean? So you got to be smart about it. But I've never been a part of a volleyball match where I'm not chippy if I'm actually competing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's the fun part of it a little bit. You know what I mean? In terms of that. And so I like it. I think it's fun for the game. I think if people are seeing it and have problems with it, then you haven't watched volleyball long enough. Because if you don't know who Tim Hovland is, then you are not aware of volleyball whatsoever. You know what I mean? Yeah. That guy's stomping on people's faces and everything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, agreed. Agreed. And we need the fun police to get out of the game. And by that, I mean the referees that one little glance through the net and all of a sudden they're up in arms and they're pulling people over the ref stand. We don't need any of that here. Leave it alone. It's part of
Brian the game. Lewis was another guy. That guy was,
Obradovich with another one.
Yeah.
Moonhart. Those guys are all, they were just characters. I love that stuff.
We'll bring one of the podcasts next week.
You have to go rated R on your heading when you put it out, just so you know.
I think this isn't a country club sport. You know, I don't know any other team sport that you're supposed to be incredibly quiet. You're not supposed to talk to servers. You're not supposed to chip across the net. If it's a team sport, you do, right? Like in tennis is the only sport I know where that's the case. And this is not a country club sport. Golf is like that. We're different. We definitely want to be different.
Is this an MPS or Big West rule that you can't say anything when the server's tossing the ball?
It was, I think that became an MPSF rule back when we were in the MPSF. We had a player that used to scream at the top of his lungs during someone's serve. It was great, and the crowd loved it.
Somebody brought it over to the MIVA. I'm not going to say who, and said, hey, we need to institute this. And I'm like, why do we care? Like, we're carrying these large benches. They want to get into the game. As long as they're not saying something that's bad or unclassy, well, who cares who's talking when? Do you know what I mean in terms of this? And so,
I feel like Brad's got something to say. Like, he's been holding back, and but maybe he's just like the pure one of the bunch here.
I mean, we have we enjoy competing. We have a good time. I think like the big thing is like as long as you're able to continue doing your job, you know, I think sometimes as a young competitor or like young players, sometimes that talking through the net or trying to prove you're the man can get in the way of doing your job, right? And that's really, in my eyes, where that line's crossed, and not even so much like with the other team, but more so within our group, within our team, within our program, is as long as you can keep doing your job and you know what your job is and you can keep managing that, you know, like, and you see it a lot in the middle, like sometimes middle will bounce the ball and then they stare them down. And then, you know, the next play, that opposite middle gets a little bit more jumpy and doesn't want a ball bounced on them again. And it's like, hey, that may not be the game plan. That may not be what we're trying to do. You know, so having that maturity, the competitive maturity, because competing isn't just talking trash through the net. Competing is being able to continually do your job and do your assignment, whether it's 0-0 or 26-25.
Well, and two more things before we move on. First of all, a lot of these kids play club against each other or with each other. So they're just, you know, reliving a little bit of the old personalities back in the day or giving it to them. That part's fine. What about basketball? I mean, basketball gets stare downs all the time. They're chirping at each other as they're running up and down the court. They're almost encouraged to do that. Now, granted, there has been some fights in recent months on the basketball court, which I don't think anybody wants to have any part of. But our boy Rick Olmstead tried to make that point to me one time earlier this year in Santa Barbara. And I said, Rick, when's the last fight you've seen happen on the volleyball court? And he mentioned in 1978 versus UCLA. That's the last fight we've had. You don't think the coaches are well aware of when it starts to get a little hand and we tell a kid to back off a little bit? Nobody's fighting in volleyball, but why not give a little bit of a stare down, a little bit of moxie? Nothing wrong with it. Happens all the time in basketball and football.
Yeah.
I think Brad brought up a couple of good points. Like, you got to be careful about stoking a fire on the other side when it doesn't need to be stoked. So, like, if you're winning or you're doing some things, like you could spark it. You know what I mean? The flip side of that is if you're not playing well, you don't start getting into it because you're frustrated. I think that's the flip side. It's like you got to be able to play some level and have some couth about that a little bit, I think. So,
yeah. And I think one thing that's interesting on the NCAA side, like, I think there's a pretty good balance of it. The NAIA is wild, wild west, as we know, right? And you talk about the last fight, 2014 NAIA National Championship. I remember seeing one. I remember being on the bench and trying to break it up, and there was some fun stuff. And then I think it was 2021, there was another one at national tournament. So it's like, that's going to happen. I think there, just because you have so many different diverse backgrounds and people from different places and international players, American players, players.
They're faith-based schools. They're going to holy war. That's why.
Yeah, it gets fun. And like, it gets exciting, you know, and it gets the blood pumping. I think, you know, I think it definitely can cross that line, and it has a few times that I've seen. But I think for the most part, most coaches have a good idea of what's going on behind them or what's going on around them, and kind of know, like, there's no like, hey, you can't say this word, that word, but it's more like you kind of know when you hear it, like, yeah, that's a little too much.
Yeah. Well, what brought it up was obviously seeing Theo's match, and the commentary wasn't very clear as to what was happening, but I was like, whoa, that's a red card. But they weren't explaining why it came about. And, you know, it is very lightly mentioned there's talking going on, but you could see on the screen that there definitely was talking going on. And then a social post from the Grand Canyon Stanford series, there's a picture of Jackson Hickman and Will Rotman at the net face to face. And you can tell something was said. And no, those got guys, to us. No. Keep talking. So interesting. But to let Theo, did you have something to say? I felt like I may have interrupted you there.
Well, I was gonna shortly. Dan had mentioned don't stoke the fire when it isn't needed. That we had a quick story. We were at PFW and we were down 2-0 in 2016 or 2017. And we were getting thumped in their place. And we misdig a ball. It goes outside the antenna. Our setter goes to pursue it. And they had a chippy outside hitter. I forget his name at this point in time. Blonde kid, little long hair. Dan probably remembers who he is. But he gets to the edge of the court and shoulder bumps our setter. And, like, they end up colliding. And they kind of have, like, a stare down moment. Our team kind of rushes over. It ends up waking our group up, and we reverse sweep them and beat them in five. And to Dan's point, like, we were going to lose in three. It was happening. And they ended up adding some stuff to the fire that really was unnecessary, but it brought a passion out of a team that was really not playing that well. And so those things definitely do happen.
They hit the nuclear button.
Exactly.
Well, Jane, do you have something to say? I feel like you're about to... No, okay. I thought I'd end it on a light note. I came up with a great apropos dad joke for this situation here. Why do you spell referee with E's?
Why?
Because they have no eyes.
Ooh! I hope a referee doesn't listen to the podcast because you're just done, dude. No.
I'm just saying. Listen. I mean, I...
As another dad in the group, I appreciate that, Rob. Thank you. Thank you for that.
I'm a dad, but you know what? We're going to change subjects as I take over the podcast for right now. And there's been a question that has been going on about Division II championships and what that looks like. And so I'm going to help answer that question for you guys a little bit.
Dan on the mic. Let's go.
It's not us asking the questions, Dan, just so you know. We're all aware.
Yeah. So I'm going to say this again to our listeners.
All right.
So it's been passed that Division II can create championships within sports that now have 35 men. It's not just men's volleyball. It's across the board. So bowling, women's bowling, you know, gymnastics, any of these sports that want to do it. So, yeah, men's volleyball is right on the threshold to have enough teams, and they're moving that direction. But it is a process. It has to be basically go to legislation, and somebody has to propose it. That has not been done yet. Once it goes there, then it has to be approved and be the right scope and the right reasons. Then it has to go to the budget committee. The budget committee then has to put a budget together and what a format looks like and how many teams and all that stuff. And then it goes back to legislation to be voted on again. So it is probably a minimum of a 4-year process, give or take, if not a little bit longer. So you're looking at like 2029 or something, if all those things go rapidly fast in terms of that. So, but I do think many people are aware of the scope that how does that affect Division I and how does that affect Division II? And we're currently trying to get our championship to 12 teams, and that's just waiting on the budget committee. This all of a sudden we get it to 12 and then we break apart and both divisions only get 4. Is that really good for men's volleyball as a whole? And so I think there's some larger conversations that have to go on by a lot of people before that's all kind of stamped and done. And so there's your update. Anything I'm missing, guys? Like a little bit that you think people want to know?
No, I just think you need like a ruler and just like, because I just felt like I was in class getting in trouble right there.
I can throw my football at the screen, buddy. You know, so.
I think one of the interesting things to talk about, and obviously the reason why Division I basketball and Division II basketball are separate, obviously comes down to budgets. The schools are very, very different.
Right.
I think when you look across the board at men's volleyball, I don't know that that is the case. And
I disagree, though, Theo, on that. And if you want to go look at Conference Carolinas, I want to go look at the SIAC and where they're at compared to you and Brad and Jay.
Sure.
And
me. Well, and point is, if you look at it, it's almost a tier structure, right? You have the newly formed Division IIs who I think do fall under that category. The MEVA Division IIs, not the case. And honestly, very similar to most mid-major D1s, I think, across the board in terms of the player experience, what the school actually has to offer for those programs. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that because we're all limited to 4.5, there's limitations across the board in terms of the scholarship and how many great players you can stack the roster with from a scholarship perspective.
Well, you I think you hit the nail right on the head for the scholarship perspective. When D2 teams start, you know, obviously their budget is their budget. They're everybody's got a hard budget they work with, and then they fundraise on top of it, and that's usually how it works. Where I think D2s are starting to be able to put themselves higher up, a lot of them are coming out of the gate with 4.5 scholarships. Some aren't, but a lot of them, the scholarship money is their first and foremost thing. Secondly, though, they are only hiring usually one full-time coach. If they could get a GA, if they could get a part-time assistant, that's great. Or if they're in an area where maybe there's a club program that they can kind of steal a guy for practices or whatever. But I think that's where the separation really starts to happen. The good teams have 4.5 and a head coach, but the great teams have 4.5, two full-time staff minimum, sometimes a third, a higher budget to be able to travel across the country on a regular basis. And I think that's where, when this comes down the pike in 4 or 5 years, that's where I think that separation is going to start to become a little bit more prevalent, which is why D2s will be, you know, deciding what they want to do.
Yeah, I think the other thing that, because I get it, like if they form it, it's going to be good down the road. Do you know what I mean? Because it'll be good for the GLBC teams. It's going to be good for the SI. You know, those presidents want that. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, hey, we can go compete for a national championship at the D2 level. I think the thing I struggle with on a personal level is a program like mine or a program, you know, like McKendree or a program like Lincoln Memorial or Charleston. Like, hey, what if they want to have the avenue to be a single sport reclass and be D1 and help bolster the D1 schools? I think that should be there. And they got rid of it back in 2010 and 11. The last school that did it was Dallas Baptist baseball program. And they are a Division II school, but baseball competes Division I. And we've all heard of John Hopkins lacrosse. They're a D3 school, but their hockey or their lacrosse competes Division I. So it's existed in the past, and they got rid of the rule. And I just think it's one of those things in this restructure with the NCAA and everything, and maybe on a particular couple collegiate championship sports like ours, where, you know, we've been around 30 years, McKinney's been around 10 plus years. Like, hey, some of these programs that are investing the resources that want to compete should kind of have that pathway in this unique circumstance from that standpoint.
And I think the most unique piece of this whole conversation is kind of the overarching umbrella of the unknown of the NCAA and what that's going to look like from Division I to Division III, and some different basis of how they're going to break that down or adjust how it's broken down over the next 10 years with everything that's going on. I think it's hard because it's like Division I, Division II, and really everyone's trying to plan and prepare for what the future is going to look like at each institution, each conference, and each division level. But then overall, we got to keep improvising and adapting and adjusting to what the NCAA and how that's evolving and changing in this ever growing landscape that is so unknown.
Well, great stuff, Dan. Thanks for bringing it out there. I know that's been a question that's been hit up. We've discussed it kind of informally, but, you know, always good to know, because we like to see the growth of the game, but then there are these other issues as well. And this is where you guys bring in your expertise. So I appreciate you sharing that on there. With that, let's continue going with the matches that caught our eye this last week. I mean, there's a pretty big rivalry match in LA that we probably need to touch on a little bit, and a little more about Grand Canyon and Stanford, but there's some other ones out there. But I wanted to throw it out to you guys in our coaches contemplation segment here, because like I said, I'm not very prepared this week. So anything catch your guys' eye this last week in results or performance of particular teams that competed? Jay's like, no.
Yeah, I mean, I think Grand Canyon is again, they're as good as we all think they are. And two sweeps of Stanford. And again, I think that what we continue to see from this team is how they're doing it. They're not just winning. They're beating teams and beating them handily. And when you watch them play, I mean, they're just not – a lot of what we talked about with Ohio State, right? Ohio State's kryptonite, oftentimes CSUN's kryptonite is errors, right? And making a ton of them. Grand Canyon's not doing that. They take advantage of mistakes and they limit their errors and they play some really, really great ball. And so I think all eyes are on them for the rest of this season to see if they can sustain this, because they're definitely putting themselves in a position to, obviously they're already the number one team, but to potentially have a really historic season.
Yeah, 14-0 so far, and it kind of reminded me of Long Beach State with a TJ DeFalco, Kyle Ensing, and Tuaniga, but they're doing it differently because it was always TJ DeFalco or Kyle Ensing, whereas this one, it's going to Rogers, Gianni, you know, oh my gosh, Hickman, or even their middles are beginning to take over, so it's being spread out differently. So what they've got, something special there, and Worley's got them humming. So but I want to get your guys' take on
the evolution I see with Grand Canyon. Was last year they were obviously really, really good, but they were really dependent about being in system. And when they weren't in system, their offense broke down a little bit. They weren't quite as consistent out of system. And now where I've really seen the changes, they're able to win in a lot of different ways. They serve in at a high rate. Their in-system offense has had matches where it's been unreal, you know, and we've been on the receiving end of that one of the times they came out and played us. So, but seeing them be able to evolve and, you know, win some games more with their block and less with their offense, win some games with their out-of-system, win some games with their defense. And I think that's really what's kind of pushed them from that, you know, top six range to constantly being in the conversation and being the number one team in the nation. You know, so I think that evolution within the team, within the program, has been really cool to get to see that Matt Worley's been able to put in place there.
Yeah. Dan, I felt like you were going to say something there, but
no, I get to see it. I get to see him live, which was great. So like next week. So I don't know. I think Nick Slight might be a player of the year candidate if he keeps his team humming like it is. And so it'll be interesting to see. Just watch them in person and how they perform a little bit. And this is a culmination of this group being together. I mean, I know they lost an important piece last year, but you got a lot of good pieces that have been around the last few years and having a remarkable year. And so fun to see them continue going on that direction.
Yeah. Jay, anything to add in there?
Grand Canyon's real good. If you're not paying attention, you're pretty good. That's it.
That was deep. Totally deep. Well,
you were talking about other matches, though. I mean, the UCLA, USC, I mean, that's one of the biggest rivalries that's been for a long, long time. And I think they had 6,000 people in the crowd. The crowd was pretty big, right? So from what I read, and they were doing some honoring stuff, and Karch and a bunch of the alumni were there and all that stuff. So I think great volleyball in Southern California and such a big match, you know what I mean, in terms of that. I mean, we know UCLA is pretty darn good, so.
Well, night one at USC, I felt like UCLA, it was a statement match. I mean, it was, the scores were 20, 10, and 14. But, you know, on night two with the honoring of Karch Cry and the UCLA alumni, the USC turned it back on. They looked good, but UCLA just was way too strong on that night. And you're not going to do that with that kind of crowd in your house and alumni in attendance. So, you know, USC's good, not taking anything away from them, but UCLA is just playing next level as they get deeper into the season in MPSF play. Any other matches there, gentlemen? Because we touched on a good portion of them because you guys played a lot of the teams already in the top 20. So with that, let's go in our piece. Who's your player or players of the week? Always a fun segment because no one stole any early on, Dan or Theo. So let's start with Brad. He's been the pure innocent guy on the screen so far in the chippy discussion. So
I'll take the pure and innocent. We'll go with that. I kind of want to just not be anymore and just go crazy and screw everyone over here. So my coaches go well, of the week, I got three, because we had three matches and there's three guys on screen and Theo got me all riled up talking about the second set. We got Daniel Fabakovich, 18 kills against Purdue Fort Wayne, 15 kills against Ohio State, hit above 300 in both, had some blocks. Then we got Shane Wetzel on the other end, 18 kills versus Lewis. Sorry, Dan. Hit 400 and then 24 kills and an ace and 9 digs against Loyola in the 5-set match. And lastly, pretty impressive line here. Outside hitter opposite from Long Beach, Skylar Varga, 14 kills, hit 444. He had 10 digs, five aces, some bullets, a solo block, some block assists, 21 and a half points against Penn State there. So, boom, there we go.
All right.
Free Let's to make back. It hard on everyone else.
Yeah. Oh, Jay, since Jay is
just waiting. And Theo's going last. Theo's got to go last.
I'll go last. Okay, I want right. to go last, actually.
All right, so let's go to Dan then. Dan just stares, gives us the look of love moment, or is it a pause? Oh.
Go ahead with Theo. Brad stole mine. I only had one, and Brad stole
oh. All right. Theo. All right. I will take Ethan Champlin. Ethan Champlin had 10 kills, hit 400 with 4 digs and 2 blocks, 11 points against the sweep over USC. And I think he had I'm not sure what he did on night two, but night one was definitely worth it. And then I'm gonna go with Nick Slight. I think he was also a player of the week for us last week.
Yeah.
I think we are all incredibly amazed. And, you know, Rob, you compared him to the TJ DeFalco and Josh Zuniga group, and the big difference between Josh Zuniga and Nick Slight was that Josh had been in the conversation his whole career. And people knew who he was and how talented he was and what he was capable of. I don't think that was the case with Nick. I think Nick was under the radar. We knew he was a good volleyball player, but I don't think anybody expected him to be the force that he is. And the way that he's running that offense is truly, truly remarkable. So he's doing a fantastic job.
Yep. Jay said he wanted to go last, so it goes to you, Dan.
I'm going to continue some setter love. So I think Dan Magnum gets 2 wins as the full-time starter for Loyola. So I think that's pretty key. And then I'm going to get Sheward because he's got an awesome beard and he got 2 wins.
Against Brad. All right, Jay.
I'm going to go with Dan's kid, Daniel Haber, 19 kills, 567 against the old Mastodons. And then I'm going to go with the certified athletic trainers at CSUN and Charleston that handled that kid quickly. They deserve a little love. Get their pictures on there, Rob. They deserve to be on the flyer.
I need some names. Rachel Menzie. I'll do it. What are their names?
Rachel Menzie is our trainer. I don't know Charleston's trainer's name. I apologize for that.
I'll text Luke and find out.
Yeah. They deserve a little love. Unbelievable. Good call, Jay.
Well, I'm going to add one in there because I also need to mention that Hawaii went 2-0 this last week with a Sacred Heart. You know, to be expected, but they had so many different lineups in, and they were still crushing. But I'm going to put Keone Thim in there because a kid hit a 78-mile-per-hour documented jump serve ace, and it sounded good with a pop off the serve and the way it landed. Man, he should be flexing all day long after that ball because that thing was fast. So Keone Thim, Hawaii. So jumping into our final segment, what you watching this week? There's a lot. There was a lot of volleyball. There's even more volleyball this week. So let's go. Since Jay went last, he can go first this time.
The obvious answer that everyone should be watching will be the Outrigger.
Which only the Hawaii back. Matches will be streamed, which That's I'm right. very bitter
By the way,
about.
For all you folks out there that have never been to Hawaii or maybe live in Hawaii, you'll understand this. Two of my favorite places in the world, Leonard's Malasadas, and IVC, a little bit of a throwback, if you will, from El Jade, but it's Island Vintage Coffee. Not only do they make fantastic coffee, the best peanut butter mango sandwich you've ever had in your life. So there's some places you can go check out while you're out there. But obviously, Hawaii's got Grand Canyon, UC Irvine, and Lewis coming out there. I'm also going to be watching Penn State versus UCLA, USC, and Northridge. Talk about a bulky week for the Penn State crew. They're going to be out there taking on those matches. And I want to see BYU Stanford. I want to see if Stanford can regroup and get into the – is it at BYU or is it at Stanford? Does anybody know?
I need to scroll to my
Stanford, list. But I'm not sure.
If it's at Stanford, I like their chances. But BYU's been on a tear in recent weeks. I'm really going to be watching that match too. Those are my picks.
At Stanford. There you go. Confirmed.
There you go.
All right, let's go over to Dan. Or are you still looking? You're looking intent there.
Jay stole a lot. You know what I mean?
All right, I set a bad precedent for us. That was bad.
I do think NJIT and Mason play, so I'm going to give Jay some love there. You know what I mean? So it's a good even matchup outside of the Penn State swing. And then a team we haven't talked about much, Harvard's playing Merrimack. Harvard is kind of sneaking their way up. They might slide in the rankings or be close. They've got a couple wins that are on those teams that are on that backside, and they're doing okay in conference. So a team to keep your eye on as we kind of move forward. And then in Armiba, we got Lindenwood and Quincy, which we haven't said much about Quincy, but they got an outside that is crushing it. If you go look, he's leading the conference in points and kills, or pretty close to the top. It's a senior year for him, so I'll be curious to see how that match kind of rolls out. So,
all right, let's go over to Theo.
Yeah, I think you know, teams that we haven't talked about a bit that I'm actually pretty excited for this week. St. Francis takes on Edgewater and Fort Valley State. I love Fort Valley State has been doing some really nice things, and you know, obviously, these are teams that are newer, right? And as they've been on the up and coming, I feel like they're continuing to get better and better, and having made trips out to the West and seeing what some good volleyball looks like. And I love Larry Rather. I think he's doing a great job over at Fort Valley State. So I got to put that plug in there for sure. The other one that I think is going to be really interesting is Morehouse in Fort Valley State, which I wanted to make sure. I think they've kind of turned into a little bit of a rivalry. And with these schools, we obviously don't talk about them quite as much. And so I'm excited to see those matchups for sure.
Yeah, going back to what Dan said, the outside hitter, I believe, is Raji Elaine, the 6'6 junior opposite from Bridgeton, Barbados. So if you look at the stats, a lot of kills for Quincy. So, but had to put that in there. I always want to give the athletes love when I can. So let's go over to Brad.
Yeah, I think just emphasizing the outrigger is one thing. And just we're going to look back at this weekend with outrigger, and it is going to determine some of the at-large bids going into the national tournament, which is exciting and also kind of scary when it's, you know, we still have another 2 months left of the season. You know, Grand Canyon, Hawaii, Irvine, Lewis, I think those are all people who are going to be in some of those conversations. And then we have Ohio State, UCLA. I believe Ohio State 1-5 out in Texas. So UCLA getting the rematch there. And I think another one that could potentially be really interesting is Quincy and Maryville. I think Maryville's got some good players. They've been playing some good volleyball. And Quincy obviously is battle-tested being in the MIVA. So I think that one can end up being a sneaky battle of a team that I think a lot of people probably don't know about, being Maryville.
Yep. All excellent calls. Gentlemen, that concludes our episode, week 10 episode. And best of luck to you on your travels. And to remind you, last year's Outrigger, if you remember that setting, UCLA, Hawaii, PFW, and who am I forgetting on there? Penn State. Yeah. Number one upset, UCLA, Hawaii beat. I mean, it was a hot mess out there, but it was so fun to watch.
Late nights. Rob, I'd like to throw in, hey, 1 minute, really fast. You get like 10 seconds each, coach. Your opinion on the throws.
Oh, yeah.
I got asked this question. So, Jay,
you're long, but if you guys can hang, I want to hear what you guys – and we're talking about the shove-in attacks that we're seeing, the two-hand attacks. Is that correct? Are we – going other
contacts. I think we're talking about not just the two hand, but the one hand cock and throw like this and go and contact and get out. So
there you got patting that, the cock and throw. It's awful. It's all awful. Right, let's go.
Not water polo. Dan made the challenge. Volleyball. It's not water polo. It's volleyball.
All right. Quick to the point, Jay. Theo's looking like he's ready to throw one out there.
Well, so here's the thing. As far as the double, right, we know that on the women's side, they have gotten rid of the double contact, right? And essentially, for me, I think that's the future for our game. The throw, we need to keep the throw. I agree with Jay. You cannot cock the ball back and throw it. That we cannot get rid of that.
All right.
You guys are wrong. We need more of it. It's great. I thought all we had three lifts in our match on Sunday. I thought all three were cool and good. Let them go be athletes. Let them go play. If it's so hard, you can just figure out a way to stop it.
I disagree with more than one joint bending on the throw, and that's how it's always been called ever since. Like if you have one joint, you can throw and it's in front of you, it's legal. If you start bending three and you're like this, I might as well just play baseball because I'm not hitting the ball anymore. I'll just go ahead and throw and attack everything. So it's like, I think there's some leniency on it and you can get away with it. But at some point, like we challenged a call this year where a guy cocked through, took it off a guy's hand and then went off. They called it off on us. I challenged it. It was off on him because he's the last one touching the ball. But if you don't have a good replay system, they're going to call that off the blocker every time, which isn't true. Do you know what I mean? And so like, I don't know. I think you can do a little bit of it, but it's got to be in front of you, and it can't be too many joints breaking at the same time. If it's behind your head and stuff, and then I think it's got to get called.
But I think there's some times where these balls are getting out of their hands faster than a setter's would.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but the setter's not taking it from behind their head and bending three joints.
Well, there we go.
I think that's my piece, so.
I think as long as we have refs making the decision, it's going to be different game to game. And that's the challenge that we're up against. And coming up with a way to make it so that it's consistent match to match, I think is the biggest question for me. And how do you do it? Even though I totally agree. I think if you're bending multiple joints, that's terrible. And we can't – I don't know how you defend it. And so the figuring out how to defend it and also defend the hard-driven ball – is incredibly challenging. So how do we do it? That's the next question.
Guys, I got to go. I got a meeting. Throws are awful. We're not playing water polo. We're playing volleyball.
Yeah, guys. Referees have no eyes. That's the key. All right. All right, gentlemen. Appreciate you this week.
All the refs, right? Don't job.
Appreciate you guys. That's Jay already left, but that's Jay Hossick of George Mason, Theo Edwards of CSUN, Brad Ross Stratter of UC San Diego, Dan Friend of Lewis. Appreciate your time this week, and look, best of luck, and we'll catch you next Monday.
Thanks for listening to College Volleyball Weekly. Be sure to follow Rob Aspero at The Rob on the Mic on Instagram and at Rob on the Mic on Twitter.